die, Father, is nothing left. Ever since I was a child, I had a feeling that something is missing me. I want to know why I'm here. Can any of us know that?
Become yourself. Then God and the devil don't matter.
I want to learn. I want to understand. Be careful. Can you find the force to enable these two quite opposite lines to live together in yourself? At any moment, the wolf can devour the lamb.
And you must learn what it means to become responsible.
This is an exact thing. And that is why you are here.
And before known history, to the unknown future, this is Reneus Radio. For the Seeker.
I must strive to know.
Greetings and welcome to everyone. You are listening to Red Ice Radio and my name is Henrik. We are coming to you from our headquarters in Sweden on the Scandinavian Peninsula. We've been doing this radio program since 2006 and the website has been going since about 2002. We cover subjects from across the world and beyond on all the things that we find important, interesting and inspiring. At redicecreations.com you can find more. Today we're talking with Dan Johnson about people against the National Defense Authorization Act. Dan is 19 years old and Eagle Scout and has been recognized as one of the top 30 impromptu speakers in the United States. He is a political science major at Bowling Green State University and speaks a moderate amount of Japanese. After doing research about the NDAA, he founded PANDA, People Against the National Defense Authorization Act. PANDA is supported by groups across the political spectrum and is one of the fastest growing liberty movements in the United States, with over 25 teams across the country. He is recognized by many as an upcoming expert on the subject of liberty versus national security. The 2012 National Defense Authorization Act, RH-347, and the gradual slide towards an American police state. Well, welcome to the program, Dan. Thank you for coming on, first of all, and we really appreciate talking with you today. So thank you for coming on first.
Definitely. Thank you for having me on.
So give us an outline, if you will, a little bit of what we're going to discuss here today of the NDAA. And let's not assume that everyone knows what we're talking about here. So let's get into the background of this beast right away, if you will, Dan.
All right, sure. The NDAA, or National Defense Authorization Act, is a law passed by the United States Congress in order to fund the U.S. military. It provides a lot of the funding for the weapons, funding for food, funding for housing, et cetera, for the U.S. Armed Forces. And it has been passed for 51 years now. Well, since it passes every year with very little fanfare, it's a couple arguing over who gets this Air Force base and who gets this amount of planes. But very little fanfare, it just passes through, and no one wants to be seen voting against it for fear of being seen as they don't support the troops. So this bill passes every year, and you get around to post 9/11. And the United States has this kind of paranoid fear of terrorism, especially in our governmental branches. And in 2007, the John Warner National Defense Authorization Act authorized a military unit to operate on U.S. soil, only on U.S. soil, in violation of one of our laws called Posse Comitatus, which restricts military from being used as policing on U.S. soil. But in violation of that, they created a special military unit on U.S. soil to be used for crowd control and civil disobedience purposes. However, that was repealed in 2009. That 2007 NDAA led the way as a needle in the haystack led the way to the 2012 NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act, which, in a nutshell, authorized the indefinite military detention of any person, including American citizens on American soil, without charge or trial, and applying the laws of war, making the entire world, not just America. Now, the U.S. Congress is trying to pass a law basically for the entire world, and they did, and they passed, and it was signed into law. But this law, this NDAA, applies the laws of war, making the world the battlefield, and we are at war. The United States government is at war around the world, and applied that not only around the world, but directly to U.S. citizens on U.S. soil as well. That was signed into law on December 31st, 2011, by President Barack Obama, and violates approximately 13 to 14 provisions of the United States Constitution and various natural rights all across the board. And it was debated quite a bit in the 2013 NDAA. Like I said, it's a law that passes every year.
Yeah,
it was debated a little bit in the 2013 NDAA, and eventually 2013 NDAA passed through with little to no, and actually no protections for the inalienable rights of the people of the United States and of American citizens, even around the world. It just passed without any new protections and without blocking the indefinite detention sections of the 2012 NDAA, sections 1021 and 1022. So as we stand today, there's a lawsuit in process, Hedges v. Obama, against the indefinite detention provisions of the NDAA. There are groups like ours who are fighting it on the state and local level. And we have a Congress that is recalcitrant to honor their sworn oath to protect our inalienable rights. And the NDAA, indefinite detention, the laws of war, torture, assassinations, executions, etc., are legal for the military and the government to perform on U.S. soil.
What does this mean, if you will? Can you give us a scenario of when this potentially could be applicable? As always, there is with law text, so this is up to interpretation. How can it be used? How will it be used? These are two very different things. But if we look at the official kind of version of this first down, how will it be used, do you think?
How will it be used necessarily in a way we think it might be used, or in the way that they have posited that it would be used?
Let's talk about them both. Let's say what they've done first, how they say it.
Okay, so they come out and say that they would never use it. In fact, President Obama said that I have this power, but would never use it in his signing statement, which is basically his opinion of the law attached to the 2012 NDAA he signed on New Year's Eve 2011. So the administration has claimed it would never use this power, but wants it anyway. So they claim that it'll never be used. They claim no person will ever be detained, and they call us silly for saying it could happen here. And they also forget about Executive Order 9066, signed into a law by President Roosevelt, which told all Japanese Americans living near the coast that you will be put in detention camps, and we will hold you in those detention camps. And actually, the anniversary of that executive order was on the 19th, so 2 days ago. Or a couple days ago, rather. And this executive order shows that this has happened before, which leads us to our conclusion of a possible scenario. Now, again, predicting the future is impossible.
Sure.
Yep. Even though the pundits in America who try to predict the future are actually the highest rated, even when they're wrong 80% of the time. Even though it's impossible to predict the future, we can look at historical precedent to try to give us an idea of what might happen. Now, remembering that when you cut off the head of a movement, that movement either ceases to exist or has a tough time existing. And this indefinite detention clause and these provisions are not designed to be used on a widespread scale. They're not designed to be, okay, send the military in everyone's homes and detain everyone. Mm-hmm. That's not how they're designed to be used. They're designed to be used to take out high-value targets. High-value targets like the leaders of movements to make government smaller. High-value targets like those against drone strikes. High-value targets like journalists who reveal information the government doesn't want revealed. Those are the people that the NDAA would be used on. Hacktivists, even, who maybe no one knows they exist, but they do a lot of good work or work the government doesn't want people to be doing, which is often the same thing.
Kind of like an Aaron Swartz, if you will. Possibly.
Exactly. Yeah. Kind of like an Aaron Swartz or a Jeremy Hammond or something of the sort.
Mm-hmm.
And the NDAA would be used to indefinitely detain these people and basically remove them from public life or just straight out execute them or assassinate them. I mean, you had a video released by the Department of Defense advertising these MAVs, these brand new, almost bug size drones that the United States Air Force is planning on using. And it's a concept at this point. They're growing them. They're trying to get them to be put into use, but the technology's not there yet. Even still, these would be used not just for indefinite detention. This law can be used since it applies the laws of war and none of the protections of the laws of war, just the laws of war that hurt us in the United States and around the world, really, to assassinate. I mean, you can look at, before we get into a hypothetical scenario, you look at the assassination of two American citizens in Yemen. You got Anwar al-Awlaki, and then 2 weeks later, they killed his son, Abdulrahman al-Awlaki. Both were American citizens from Colorado. And they killed them under this broad authorization for use of military force power. Well, guess what? That authorization for use of military force power that they claimed in order to execute two American citizens abroad, and who knows how many others who are non-American citizens abroad, has been copied and pasted into the NDAA and adding more sections that make it even vaguer and even easier to use against any person.
Hmm.
So getting into a hypothetical scenario, now that we've looked at some historical context, you're a journalist and you are asked to hang out with, let's say, someone like myself. And someone like myself happens to be on the suspected terrorist watch list. And so you hang out, we spend the day together, or this journalist and I spend the day together, and the journalist gets ready to publish an article. Well, if he knows he can be indefinitely detained by the military without a charge, without a trial, without seeing an attorney, and without seeing his family ever again, and he knows that the standard for being detained is committing a belligerent act, an undefinable act, is he going to be more likely to write a positive story about me or a negative story? He's going to be more likely to write a negative story because Sure. He doesn't want to be seen associated with terrorists or committing a belligerent act.
Mm.
Now, that's a light example, but that's an example of how it can chill free speech. Now, what if that journalist did publish something that was in favor of someone like myself, who constitutionalists, anti-federalists? Now, anti-federalists were mentioned recently in a West Point report called Challengers from the Sidelines, Understanding America's Radical Right.
Yep,
anti-federalists were mentioned in this report for being the people that are terrorists, that are dangerous to society. Well, why would they mention anti-federalists? No other report does. Nobody cares about anti-federalists. Anti-federalists is not even a party today. Why? Anti-federalists wrote the Bill of Rights and presented the Bill of Rights, which is the cornerstone of our Constitution. And so they're calling people like myself, who I would never even think of committing a criminal act that could be labeled as terrorism. But they're labeling people like myself as terrorists because we are doing things the government would not prefer.
Right.
The government doesn't want us doing. And so that journalist, he decides to publish an article in favor and saying, you know, these guys are really doing some good work. I went in expecting them to be horrible people. I went in expecting that, I believing what the government told me, that they were horrible people. And I found out that actually they were really good people. Actually, they were really constitutionalists. They were really fighting to preserve our Constitution, not really, they're not fighting to overthrow government. They're just fighting to restore it to the constitutional boundaries. And he publishes that article. And he's indefinitely detained, and the government says that's national security reasons. You can't be associating with terrorists. We think you're a terrorist. And they can indefinitely detain him under the NDAA. That's where this scenario could play out over and over and over again with journalists, with leaders of activist groups, with, I mean, our United States government has been growing almost unchecked for at least 100 years. And people who are against that growth have been noted as potential terrorists, violent extremists. So the government is making it very clear who they'll use it against. And governments throughout history, including our own, the United States government in the Civil War, there was a man in the North who his name was Milligan. And he was detained for, quote unquote, participating in like rebel activities. And Lincoln had set that out in executive order that participating in rebel activities was wrong and it's going to get you detained and we're going to remove you from the quote unquote battlefield. And he was taken to military detention and summarily executed. So this has happened before in our history, that we just take someone that is not saying what the president wants them to be saying or not saying what the executive branch wants them to be saying, and remove them. Look at the Alien and Sedition Acts. Same thing. Gone. And look at the, I want to say it was the McCarthy Act or something of the sort. And you see this over and over and over again. Well, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, and all men are evil. That's the full quote from Lord Acton. If power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, and we're giving the president the power to indefinitely detain not just U.S. citizens, not just people on U.S. soil, but anyone around the entire world, either indefinitely detain or execute them. Number one, since when do we make choices for the world in the United States?
Right, yep.
And number two, since when should we give any person that power? Even if you trust this president, what about the next one and the next one?
That's right.
So that's a scenario that I see playing out relatively easily under the NDAA.
Tell us a little bit, Dan, how you see this possibly taking place in other countries, in other parts of the world. I remember a story, I think it was a few years ago now, when the Swedish government, I think, helped the CIA to trap some people in Sweden and extradite them pretty much, or whatever it was. It's been, you know, various stories like that have been coming out, and these are some of the quote-unquote terrorists that they've been, you know, sending to Abu Ghraib and these prison camps and in different parts of the world and whatnot. Do you expect it would be something similar, that local governments would still help the American army in this case, or is there any examples here that you have heard of how this would play out?
I must confess I don't keep too much of an eye on European news, but I have not heard of any incidents. I'm sure it has happened, but I have not heard of any incidents of it happening in Europe. However, would local governments help? Of course. The federal government would demand their help, and very few countries deny a United States demand that the CIA or the DIA or the military forces, special forces, be able to come in their country and detain someone seen as a threat. So you see, the bigger danger here is the government is determining who the threat is.
Right, yep.
And that definition is ever-changing and can be ever-changing because they set the definition.
In NDAA, is there any definition therein of what a terrorist is, or one of these high-value targets?
Absolutely not. let me go through some of the terms in the NDAA. You could be indefinitely detained for committing a belligerent act, for directly supporting or substantially supporting associated forces of terrorism, against coalition partners of the United States. It's not just the U.S. Speaking of the U.S. making laws for the entire world, it's not just the U.S. It's against anyone the United States considers at that time a coalition partner. So if I were to take the terms in the NDAA literally, I could say in America, if you applauded someone who put on a rodeo criticizing Germany, you could be considered a suspected terrorist in the most extreme interpretation of this act. And remember, the AUMF has been interpreted very extremely in order to allow execution in Yemen of American citizens. So I'm not going off on a terrible tangent here. But let me explain how you can do that. You are directly supporting by applauding that person who put on that rodeo. They are associated forces because there was someone sitting next to them the government considers to be a suspected terrorist and considers on the terrorist watch list. They gave him a water bottle. So they're substantially supporting terrorism. They are associated forces of terrorism. The rodeo and its criticism is a belligerent act, and Germany is a coalition partner of the United States.
Wow. So this is obviously not encouraging at all, and I want to back up again so make sure we can cover this and understand how this conflicts obviously with the Posse Comitatus Act that you talked about, and then again how legally this is possible, if it even is legal.
So what specifically are you asking here? How it dances with the Posse Comitatus?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we that is in place and that is there to prevent this very thing from happening, right? So has that been scrapped pretty much at this stage, or what happened with that?
Well, Posse Comitatus was originally written to keep the military and the police separate. It basically states that under no circumstances should the military be able to be allowed to execute the laws of the United States, or which could also be said, perform policing duties in the U.S. And this was just specifically put in because there's a huge dividing line between the police and the military, and the founders knew this, and that's why they said we can have a standing Navy, but not a standing Army, because the Navy stays outside of U.S. soil. But if you look at Posse Comitatus and you say, okay, well, there's no policing here, and you ask why, the Founding Fathers very clearly and very concisely showed us. And the difference is police, or as they were originally called in the U.S. at least, peace officers, are there to preserve the peace. They're not there to protect. They're there to preserve the peace. They're not there to kill. They're there to preserve the peace. Military, on the other hand, is designed to be as lethal as possible. And there is a such thing as excessive force in the military, but it's nowhere near as stressed as in police forces. When you mix the two together, violating Posse Comitatus, as has happened so many times in the past 10 years in the U.S., when you mix the two together, you create a police force that is as lethal as the military, and therefore you have incidents like in the LAPD's case, they were shooting at trucks that didn't even resemble Chris Dorner, who's the man they were going after. It was a big manhunt in the U.S. I'm not sure if you guys caught wind of it.
Yeah, I remember it briefly, yeah.
Yeah, it was a big manhunt in the U.S. and all across like 7 different states. But they shot 3 innocent people in 2 different trucks that looked nothing like Chris Dorner's truck. But because these police are not seeing themselves as peace officers, but as enforcers of the law, and allowed to use lethal force with the military training they've been given, then you have incidents like this where they fired almost 48 rounds at 2 young ladies in a truck, almost killed them both, and where they fired several more rounds at a white guy in a truck when they were looking for Dorner, who is an African American, who is black. So you have a dangerous coalescence between the military and the police. And that's what Posse Comitatus was designed to keep from happening, because they knew when the police went from peace officers to lethal enforcers of the law, they would lose support of the public. And when they lost support of the public, they would not be able to do their job as well. Crime rates would go up. And overall, society and the republic as a whole would not be well served. Well, the NDAA, now that America is officially a battlefield, in fact, United States Senator Lindsey Graham, as we call him, shut up, you don't get a lawyer, Graham, said on the United States Senate floor that the world, and I quote, "the world is the battlefield, including the homeland," end quote. So if homeland is the battlefield and the laws of war, which under the AUMF have been used to execute two American citizens, if the United States is a battlefield and the laws of war have been used to execute American citizens and the laws of war are being applied on the U.S., we have no more constitutional rights here if the government chooses to take that route. So in effect, we have a two-tier court system now in the United States. Military courts and constitutional Article 3 courts. If they like you, they give you an Article 3 trial. You probably get off because there's nothing that they'd ever have against you, just committing a belligerent act. And you'd go back home and everything would be cool. If they don't like you, the people in power don't like you, they send you to a military tribunal, a military court, or they just detain you without trial, period. And you don't get your constitutional rights. And it is a battlefield. So, in effect, even though they won't come out and say it, the NDAA, America is a battlefield under it. So Posse Comitatus no longer exists. And when you hear of incidents like in Miami, Florida, I'm unsure how often this happens in Sweden, but in America, the military does not engage the civilian population. And they keep on their military bases and they travel back and forth from them, but there's no military exercises usually in our towns. Miami, Florida, they had two helicopters firing blank rounds at each other. Sounds like a war zone. Houston, Texas, same thing. Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, go down the list. All of these different cities in the United States have had military drills in them because we're now a battlefield. It's okay to do that. Posse Comitatus no longer applies. Because we are a battlefield legally, not constitutionally. Because constitutionally, our rights are inalienable. They're not granted by government. They cannot be taken away by government. But legally, the United States is a battlefield, and therefore Posse Comitatus no longer has any effect.
Very, very worrying. And, we understand the tactic here as well, that they keep updating the act, they keep changing the language therein, the definitions that we see as well. At what time in all of this did you kind of get your eyes open to this, Dan?
Well, thanks to my parents who homeschooled me, I studied since we really didn't have video game consoles when I was growing up until maybe the last 4 or 5 years I was at home. So I went to the library. And I studied World War II, especially the rise and fall of Imperial Japan and the rise and fall of the Third Reich. Also studied the Winter War between Finland and Russia and the Russian communist regime and the Cold War. And having had that advantage of studying history and knowing what that history repeats itself, came across... I was actually procrastinating homework.
good for you.
And one of my interests was politics on a site called StumbleUpon. And I stumbled across a YouTube video. And the name of the YouTube video was 61 Senators Betrayed You Today. And I always have a basic interest in politics. I watched Fox News. cough. And so I had a basic interest in the political system. And So it caught my eye. I decided to watch it. And I remember sitting there, remember looking at that video and going, this can't be happening here. Where's this? This is not American. This can't be happening in America. I remember watching that video over and over and over again and just looking at it, jaw dropped in utter disbelief that this could be happening. I mean, look at the NDAA, put it together with the Patriot Act, and you have the Reichstag fire decrees of Nazi Germany. There's no way around it. And looking at that, looking at the correlation, and then looking at the country cycle for America, most countries and civilizations last 250 to 300 years. Our 250th year will be 2026. And looking at all of that and just staring at that video, eyes wide open with disbelief, I decided to put my brain back together and do a little bit of research and find out what is this law? What's going on here? And eventually, this would have been about November of 2011. And January 9th of 2012, after the law was signed and I finally finished my research on it and I remember deciding that no history repeats itself. I refuse to let America become another Nazi Germany. Remember, Nazi Germany didn't come about overnight. It was a gradual shift in the governmental policies. And this was in around 1933, where the Reichstag fire decrees were issued. And with all of that in mind, I saw how close we were. At least with this law, I didn't know all the other stuff existed. I was as we call them here in America, a neocon or a neoconservative. And I was totally for big government. I probably would have stood in the streets and beat the protesters myself. And it's sad to say that, but that was my belief system. And coming across the NDAA in late November and then deciding to fight it in January, I could not believe this is happening in America. I could not believe America had fallen down this far. The land of the free and home of the brave. How far had we fallen? I can't just remember being completely shocked. And it really shattered my world of what I thought was real and true. And so I decided to fight this. I decided that I'm not going to live in Nazi Germany. I'm not going to live in a dictatorship. And this is exactly what it's becoming. And with that in mind, I decided to fight the NDAA. I decided to jump in the ring. And it's been a whirlwind of a ride, if you will, ever since.
Indeed, very good. Now, this is also the upside with homeschooling that I wanted to mention. Just as a side note, we talked about it before on the program, of course, but homeschooling is banned in Sweden and central control is at play there. So yeah, absolutely. But you're a young man. It's always very encouraging with young people getting involved in this. And it's always exciting when young folks are getting involved. And then, so you are the main instigator behind the website, yes? Or how did that come about?
Yeah, I got together with a couple of guys down here in Bowling Green, Ohio, in the U.S., and we decided that hey, we're all gonna fight this together. So we started out here in Bowling Green, Ohio, and my good friend Zachary Schock, who's really no longer with the organization, but he did pen our name, Panda. I'd come up with some silly acronym with acronyms in it that would have been taken 2 years to say, and really wouldn't help our marketing at all. And the Sam Link was another crucial aspect of our team, the Young Americans for Liberty here, and the Oath Keepers, which I'm not sure how familiar you are with them, but the Oath Keepers are a wonderful organization and basically military in the United States takes an oath to our Constitution to uphold the rights and liberties of the people, and Oath Keepers is holding them to that oath even after they're out of the military or out of law enforcement. And they helped us get started as well. And then it was kind of the driving force behind the website. And we put together, originally called it peopleagainstndaa.com, which we still own. And it will direct to our current website, which is pandaunite.org. And that I guess you could say I was the driving force behind the organization. I could talk about so many people who have poured into me and who have been really a wonderful, wonderful help. But it was just a group of college guys, really, and a couple college girls, and we got it started, and we pushed it forward. And it grew. It really did. And I'm very glad, and I'm very grateful of where it's come, and of all the people who have helped us get to where we are.
Very good. Now, are you surprised overall, though, that no adults around you at the time have spoken out in a more organized way sooner than this, that you had to take the reins and kind of begin this thing, if you will?
I was. It was amazing that a act of Congress would pass with so little fanfare. And it wasn't this isn't exactly renaming a post office.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, this is something fairly serious. And to pass, and you talk to people, have you heard of the NDAA? And they're like, well, no. Well, it allows the definite detention of people without charge or trial. And, oh, really? And the amazing amount of ignorance and apathy toward it was also initially shocking to me. Because a law like this really spells the end for any place that calls itself a constitutional republic. It spells the end to any semblance of a constitutional republic having the ability to kill any person on a whim of anyone in the executive branch. That you're no longer a constitutional republic. You can't even claim that with any sort of truth. So it was surprising to see a lot of adults not pay any attention to this. But even still, I've found many, many adults along the way. We have a variety of ages all the way through our organization. And I found many adults along the way who are paying attention, who are listening. And it's been really encouraging to see that even in what I would say is the United States is, and on that matter, because we have military bases throughout the world's darkest hour. Now, the time that we're living in, at least for a while, is one of the world's darkest hours in recent times. And to see that there actually is resistance, unlike in Nazi Germany, there really wasn't much of a resistance until there was widespread violence. But in the United States and really across the world, there is a little bit of a flame of resistance that is standing up against laws like this. And standing up against corrupt politicians who put laws in like this. And that gives me a lot of hope, energy, and excitement to see not only my own generation, but the older generation kind of waking up, if you will, to what's really happening and taking a stand against it.
Now, there are some victories here that we're going to talk about in a little bit, but tell us about the strategy, if you will, that you and the organization have and how you see that the NDAA can be stopped at this point.
Well, absolutely. Even though it is a federal law, it is something that our national government passed and signed the law. The way our national government and our federal government have been stomping on the inalienable rights of the people in America has really been an abdication of their oath and their reason for existing. So at this point, I mean, DC might as well fall in a lake and the world would be better off, actually. But because we're not only do we not trust Washington, DC and the people within to uphold their oath and to fix the NDAA, but when they have tried, when they have done anything about it, it's been what we call controlled opposition because it doesn't actually do anything. But it pretends to, and they throw a lot of fanfare about it. They say, hey, we're going to protect your rights and all this fun stuff. And you look at the actual language, the substantiation behind their arguments, and it doesn't exist. So we have a unique system in America where if a law does not follow our Constitution and is unconstitutional, it is null and void. It is of no lawful force as long as the people recognize it as so. So since the NDAA violates 14 provisions of our Constitution, we are going around to state and local governments and having them pass laws and legislation saying and agreeing that this law is unconstitutional and saying it will have no lawful force, and the law of war will not be applied to anyone inside the United States with any agency enforcing it. So, and those people who attempt to will be punished under our criminal code. And so you have our Restoring Constitutional Governance Act, and that is our most powerful piece of legislation yet. And it basically says, look, if you're a federal agent or you're anyone who's trying to detain or apply the laws of war to a person inside this state, we'll punish you under our criminal code. And so what the government calls a detention, if it was a regular person doing it, it'd be called kidnapping. And we're going to call it kidnapping. What the government calls a targeted assassination, we're going to call murder, because if a regular person did it, it would be murder. Just because you have a badge doesn't mean you have the right to violate the natural rights of the people. And that's what we're doing, is we're going around to the states saying, look, if you perform one of these acts, it is as if you never wore a badge. It's as if you are a regular person. And honestly, after you commit one of these acts, you will not be wearing a badge anymore, because it is illegal for someone who commits a felony, which would be kidnapping, murder, all of that would be felony. It is illegal for someone who commits a felony to hold the office of a federal agent. Or I believe even in the military, or to hold it, to have a position in the military.
Mm-hmm.
So we block enforcement in that manner.
So it's really... Also, at the same time, those who actually are there to enforce these laws and go according to the act, those are the ones also needs to be informed, obviously, of what they're doing and understand that it goes against the American Constitution, correct?
Absolutely. When these laws are passed, or when one of these laws, we have about 25 or so states who are standing up, but over half the United States, which hasn't happened since they tried to enforce the darn mandatory speed limit on us speedy Americans. And since 25 states are standing up, the first state that passes into law something that's actually going to protect the inalienable rights of the people of that state, that law is going to be transmitted to every single office of law enforcement and military enforcement in that state. So if it's the police, they're going to get a copy of that law. If it's the sheriffs, they're going to get a copy of that law. National Guard's going to get a copy of that law. We're going to make sure the law enforcers are informed this is not something you can enforce.
Very good. This is a very good tactic, I think, to do that as well. Because, well, I mean, let's face it, no matter how much people fight or stand out in the street with plaques and whatnot, governments around the world at this point have showed themselves to well, they've demonstrated to us all that they don't give a bleep about what anyone is saying, really. And as we know at this stage, they're not really there to represent anyone. They're there to govern according to their own means. And so, again, if we go back to that idea that they simply update the language and the acts, the laws, they revamp the definitions, etc., and by this tippy-toe tactic, they can pretty much achieve what they can then. But nonetheless, let's go back to that idea of how trying to change this, you know, has actually worked in some regards. So let's talk about some of the victories, Dan.
Yeah, absolutely. We've had actually a few recent victories that I want to bring up. But basically, the step is we find a state legislator who is willing to introduce our piece of legislation, and who's willing to push it through. There are usually several steps. It's usually a House committee and then the full House, or a Senate committee and the full Senate, depending on which side introduces it. Then it flips, and you get either the Senate committee and the full Senate, or the full House and the House committee. And then it must be signed into law by the governor. And each step along the way is a new milestone for anyone who has opposed federal power in the past. Because each step along the way is something that has never been done before, or very rarely ever been done before against a federal law. So a couple of recent ones, we actually had in Montana legislation passed 20-0 through committee.
Hmm.
Very, very unanimous support. A few weeks ago, we had Indiana 8-0 through committee. And this week, Indiana passes 31-17 through the full Senate. Arizona, NDAA passes, NDAA bill, or anti-NDAA bill rather, passes 6-2 through committee. I could think of many, many, many more around the country. I mean, Oakland County at a county level, at a local level, last October passed 20-0 unanimous consent legislation in that county. And so did Allegan County, and both of those are in Michigan. And so you've got all of these local governments saying no. No, that's enough. Of course, a law is not going to jump off the books and stand in the way of a military member who is attempting to detain someone. It's not physically possible for a law to stop a crime. The law is a deterrent. It actually takes eternal vigilance from the people. The price of liberty is eternal vigilance. And it will take that type of eternal vigilance from the people to take these victories and not only push these laws into, or push these bills into law, because that gives us a ground to stand on when we're doing this type of thing. And that helps us inform the law enforcement in the state that we're doing this type of thing. Not only does it give us that ground to stand on, but then following up that ground to stand on with having a network of people, which is the next step. Having a network of people in that state who they're regular people. They work at a job or they're unemployed or really all walks of life. But they have a side task, and that is to keep an eye out for indefinite detentions or possible indefinite detentions. We don't care if it's the person getting arrested for a crime. If it seems like a NDAA style detention, then, you know, 40 people show up at the next local government meeting in that area from the Panda team, and one by one demand those officials give an explanation. You see, that holds their feet to the fire. And that scares all these public officials into going, okay, you know, if we violate our oath, they're going to hold us accountable and we're going to lose our job. Job preservation is the number one reason legislators in America vote for anything. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it's much different in Sweden. But this kind of job preservation, this need to preserve their job, is what's going to keep the NDAA from being enforced. And eventually it's going to get to the point, and we don't care if it's a false alarm. We are eternally vigilant. So if it's a false alarm, it's a false alarm, but they're still going to see us. And eventually it'll get to the point where if they're performing an arrest that might be viewed as an indefinite detention under the NDAA, or they're performing something that looks a little tricky legally, it'll get to the point where they send us that before they do it, because they are afraid of losing their elected position. And that is how you fully stop this indefinite military detention, this application of the laws of war on people in the United States. So you have that three-level system. You have laws at the state level. You have the enforcers throughout the state who uphold those laws. And then you have the people of that state making sure that those laws are not enforced.
Let's talk a little bit here about how this could look as well, because you brought up a really good point. It's basically, how does anybody know really that they're being held under the NDAA? And because on top of that, there is, as far as I know, that you can talk more about this, but under what conditions they might keep people, let's say, can a police, you know, officer make an arrest and they're held in a cell somewhere in a prison, etc. But that can still be under the NDAA. Is there any way of knowing, if you will, because I mean, if we go back to the Abu Ghraib, you know, prisons and all that, it's pretty clear that, okay, they're in a specific place. So it's still very undefined, of course, the crimes that they committed, but we can understand that it's under the terrorism heading, if you will, Dan. But what about the NDAA?
It's very difficult to know. And it's not something the government's going to admit. Because if the government admitted that they were indefinite detaining people, there would be an outcry. there would not be as strong of an outcry as you might think, but there would be an outcry.
Mm.
Especially if they were detaining someone whose name wasn't Ahmed Filahana,
right,
or something like that.
Mm.
Someone who, and it's not to make light of the situation, is Americans were to realize that it would actually hit home to them, there would be an outcry in this nation. And the federal government wants to avoid that entirely. So they're not going to come out and admit they're detaining anyone under the NDAA. They're going to tell you, well, you know, you'll never know that.
Because they said, we're never going to anyway, but we're going to have the law, but we're never going to, you know, arrest anyone under those premises. So don't worry about it. It's all good.
Right. And Federal District Judge Catherine Forrest, one of the strongest people to uphold her oath in the judicial profession since 9/11 in the United States, she said that, and I should believe, they were talking about something along those lines, and she said, and I should believe this in spite of the fact that Congress passes laws for a reason. It's illogical to believe that someone would take power and never use it.
Yeah.
And so it'd be very difficult to tell. It would. But it's a tricky process to see, okay, what is someone detained under the NDAA? It'd be very difficult to tell, and it would really depend on the situation how you would tell, even. And it'd be something that would have to be more developed down the road of, how exactly would you tell? But eventually you get to the point where you're putting people in government and you're shrinking the size of government, first of all. Because if we shrink the size of government, and one of the ways to do that is to take away a lot of their power. You shrink the size of government, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Shrink the power, shrink the corruption. It's a direct correlation. Because not only do people who go to positions of power and end up in those positions become corrupt, but psychopaths gravitate toward those positions of power. So you take out those positions of power, and this is a longer-term goal and something that we wouldn't necessarily be able to accomplish by ourselves, obviously, as Panda, but that the American people and wide coalitions would do is chip away and really take a blade to the power of government and cut it at least in half, if not more, and then we'll see our corruption cut, and we'll see the government start to follow more the Constitution. So it's going to be eternal vigilance, and when we find something that could be an NDAA indefinite detention, we're going to force them to explain it. So if someone, we see you hear through the Village Neighborhood Watch group that, oh, this guy had a bunch of Secret Service agents come to his house, and we haven't seen him in a couple of days. That would be enough for us to say, okay, let's look into this. And let's find out who that local government is, who that local jurisdiction is. And let's show up in force at their next meeting. And not armed and not dangerous, but in force nonetheless. And say, okay, is this an indefinite detention? Are they using NDAA power? And if not, what authority are they using? If they're able to show us and tell us and prove that this person is not being detained under the NDAA, then it's probably not an indefinite detention. But if they're not, and all it is runarounds and more questions and runarounds and more questions. Then you take our powerful arm of the alternative press, which we have a lot of good relations to the people in alternative media, like Red Ice or like Coast to Coast AM or like several other alternative media places in the U.S. And they blow the story open and they shine a spotlight on government. And force government to out what they're doing. So it would be a long process. I'm not saying the person who's indefinitely detained, we'd be able to get out even.
But at least you're trying. At least you're doing something and getting involved here and raising the questions about these, suspicious cases. I mean, as we know, there's a lot of people imprisoned unjust in both America and in other parts of the world. As well, but this is like this is a whole new level to it, an organized level to imprison people under these conditions. So the important process is just what you say, to raise the awareness about the cases, to examine them and to see under, you know, what premise they're holding people, basically.
Exactly. And only through that, once the questions are answered, then we'll move on. But if there's unanswered questions, then we are either going to have the government answer those questions, or we're going to bring the media and the alternative media, and they're going to force the government to answer those questions. Remember, the government, in America at least, we operate on the principle that the government is the people. They are not a separate class from the people. They are the people. And since we the people are the government, then we the people, all we have to do is step aside from hiding something, and a spotlight is shown on that. And eventually, it may take years in some cases to say, hey, is this person indefinitely detained? But eventually, we'd find out the answers if we pressed hard enough for it. And just the threat, just the idea that we would be pressing that hard, that public pressure on government, just the idea we would be putting that public pressure on government would be enough to keep many public officials from daring to take that chance.
All right, very good. We're going to, you know, take a break here in a little bit, continue to talk more. There's more things we want to get to, and I want to ask you a little bit about your, you know, personal opinion on certain things as well. We'll see how much we can get into that as well, Dan. But tell, first of all, our listeners how they can, get involved in this, how they obviously, you know, give us the website again, but also tell us what they can do on their own, you know, local level, if there's a way that they can, you know, hook up with the website and get in contact with people maybe in their area. How have you guys set up this? And do you have any, I guess, plans in the works at this stage of things that maybe people can't find on the website yet, but it's going to be expanded, I can reckon, the more people get involved in this, correct?
Absolutely. Currently, we have about 36 state teams, almost a team in every state in the U.S. So speaking directly to U.S. listeners first, if you're in the United States, our goal is by the end of February to have a state team set up in each state in the U.S. We have 36 of them so far. We have 14 remaining. So you can go on our website under state teams, which is pandaunite.org. That's panda as in a little fuzzy bear from China. Unite.org, and look at our state teams page and find out who's running our state teams and get in touch with your team leader. And if there isn't a state team there, then you can also join us and stand up for your state and take that position of state team leader and join the organization with the most resources to stop the NDAA. And speaking to that goal is to block the NDAA by the end of the year by whatever legislative means necessary. And our goal, like I said, is 50 states having a state team in each by the end of the year. And then speaking to international listeners, we have considered and we are continuing to discuss building international teams. And these would be teams to stop a NDAA-style law from ever being instituted as a preemptive measure, to stop an NDAA-style law from ever being instituted in their country. And it would take a lot. It would take at least 50 or 60 people from one country signing up and willing to do some of the legwork into their country's constitution and obviously willing to speak English.
Right.
But we are looking at, for the international listeners, our website again is pandaunite.org. We keep on track of on top of a lot of other civil liberties news outside of the NDAA, mostly in the U.S. But again, pandaunite.org. And for the international listeners, if we get about 50 or 60 people from one country, then we would definitely start talking with some of those people via email and finding out what kind of interest there was. And we are considering some international teams. So I would say sign up as well. There is a place where you can put not in the United States, and you can note which country you're from in the comment box and the extra comments. And stop the NDAA and the danger of this law from being passed in your own country, where your own government officials would be detaining you. and keep your country from making the mistake that the United States did. So for everyone, again, that website is pandaunite.org. And we're looking forward to blocking the NDA by the end of the year. And we'll need your help to do it.
All right, very good. We're going to have the links up on redicecreations.com, of course. We're going to take a short break here. We'll be back with Dan Johnson and talk more about the NDAA in just a little bit. So stay with us. We'll be right back.